Hi, it's a Monday afternoon, and I want to take a look at some Haggadah stuff connected with the Rambam for Mishpachas Stefanski. I hope they're having a good Pesach, and I'll jump right into it. And that is, I looked this year more than usual. You know, I made a fairly close reading of the Rambam and Hilchos Chametz Matzah. You know, the Rambam has the Mishnah Torah, obviously, two sections that have to do with Passover. First of all, Hilchos Chametz Matzah, it's about eight chapters or something. And then you got another whole section about the Hilchos Karban Pesach with all the Kachim business. I didn't look at that yet. Hilchos Chametz Matzah is, you know, everybody should look at that. Let's put it this way, especially the last two or three chapters. I would say chapters 1 through 6, maybe, are technical, you know, Psachim, Bir Chametz, Betel Chametz, Bedikas Chametz, all that kind of stuff, you know, and how you make matzah, and so on and so forth, right? What's chametz, what's matzah, and so forth. But then he gets to what I would call the last chapter of Psachim, in I think chapter 7 and 8, as far as I can tell, and maybe is it 6, 7, 8, possibly? I think 7 and 8, and there he talks about Seder things, first in a kind of a general theoretical fashion, and then he actually runs you through the Seder, and then his way, and then he has a Haggadah. And they're not all identical. It's just very interesting. I'm not going to be a Rambam freak over here and go with every little detail, but some things are different. And it's very interesting to read it because, you know, he does a little bit different. The Haggadah we have, it's a matter of history, is an old document. I've talked about it before. Obviously, it arose in the Second Temple era. It's hard to tell. Is the Haggadah copying from the Mishnah or the other way around? In other words, when the Mishnah says Manish Tana Laila Zen, this and that and the other, is the Mishnah, you know, I mean, where does that come from? Is the Mishnah simply sharing a practice at that time that eventually got concretized into the Haggadah? Or what's more likely is on its own, like Topsy, there grew a Seder type system. Once the phenomenon of the Passover Seder as we have it now developed, because remember, really, Manot Torah, there's no Seder, correct? All you do is eat matzah morah, you know, Pesach matzah morah, as we know, right? You know, when the Karban Pesach, I'm saying, maybe a little bit Karban Chagig, whatever, but there's no exact, you know, you have to do this and that. But eventually it morphed into Kaddish Yurchatz, Karpas Yachatz, and so forth. Not necessarily those words, but a certain Seder. And I've talked about the historical background of that with the Greek narrative and all the other stuff, the competing Egyptian narrative. I'm not going into that. But early on, the Jews somewhere, probably starting in Egypt, probably, developed this counter-narrative which involved a very, very structured, didactic Seder, right? In which you're not only eating a meal, but there's a whole discussion involved with it. And it has many elements of the Greek meal, the four cups and the four this and the four that. But putting that aside, there was a Haggadah. And it's very possible that the Mishnah is actually lifting from the Haggadah that was existing at that time, or the other way around. That's the machlokes among scholars. And eventually, what you and I call the classic Haggadah comes from the Gaonic period. Rav Abram Gaon has the, I believe, the Har Haggadah. And then he was in the 800s, and in the 900s, is Sadia Gaon, who has a little bit different, but, you know, roughly the same. And these two Haggadahs, as far as I understand it, are the template for what we have today. And after that, it's a little bit of adding and subtracting and a little bit of pinching here and there, adding a couple of piyutim, like Chag Gadya and so on and so forth. And even within that, there are little details in which different Rishonim and different communities had somewhat different customs, very slightly different. And it's just interesting to see it. And in the middle of that falls the Rambam, who, of course, is generally coming from the Spanish school. I mean, before the Ashkenazic Spanish. I mean, you know, when the Jews were still in Muslim Spain. Therefore, it's the, as far as I know, it's the Minhagim of the Yeshiva Lucina of Moshe Ben Chanoch, Chanoch Ben Moshe, and all those guys, right? The Rif especially, So in his guise as Rosh Hashiva in Spain. Okay, and Ritz Kiyas and so forth. So the Rambam does it, you know, so to speak, his way, as the expression goes. And there's no surprise in that, right? Now, therefore, you see things, and I don't even know exactly what the Sephardim, but I don't think they do. I mean, let me put it this way. The Rambam says you dip the matzah in charosis. Now, do you dip the matzah in charosis? And I think he also says you don't dip the carpets in salt water, you dip it also in charosis. Charosis is all over the place, right? And I think he has a special bracha for charosis even, and things like that. That's just one little detail. And if you look at his Haggadah, it's Meiser, Belezer, Bekeeper, Abtarfin, and Bnei Brak. And then, not like we have it, then after that comes Omer Lozer, Zahar, Harei, Nikivin, Shibim, Shona. Omer Lehemra, Belezer, Ben Azariah. In other words, at that Seder in Bnei Brak, that's when Belezer, Ben Azariah brought up this business about, you know, Tzitzis Mitzrayim, Belelos. Which is interesting, you know, because it says they were up talking all night. And you can learn it that way, but not necessarily. That's a Mishnah, as you know, and seems to be distinct from the story of, you know, of the Seder in Bnei Brak. And some Farshim are even asking why you put it in there. And the answer, since it has to do with Yitzis Mitzrayim, but it, the way the Rambam has it, it took place at that night. If you were at the Rambam Seder, he would be saying that was a major topic of discussion, which means it was a pretty lumpish topic of discussion, unless they went the ideational route. And started talking about Yitzias Mitzrayim Balelos, you know, like the Nebi Huda has the different goluses, and it's all code words and so on and so forth. But you see a lot of little things like that. And it's interesting. What struck my attention was the Rambam's treatment of the Maggid, because, again, the Rambam has a Haggadah all the way at the end of Hilchos Chametz HaMatzah. It's pretty close to ours. But preceding that, in chapter 7, he has general remarks about the principles behind these ceremonies. And especially, I have in mind the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So we have a Haggadah, and the Maggid part is supposed to be the part where formally you are being the kind of mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's what the Maggid is, right? I mean, the eating is not that, right? The washing of the hands is not that. The talking part is that, the Maggid. And I don't need to tell you, you know, the Nusach HaGadah first starts Avonim Ayinu and this and that and the other. And eventually, once you finish that out, it goes to Mitzchilov Devaris Aryeh Vaseinu. And one's Rab and one's Shmuel. The first one is Shmuel, and the second one's Rab. The Rambam flips it, at least in chapter 7. That doesn't mean that's what he does in when he gets his actual Haggadah. But it's interesting to me. I'm looking at Perek Zayin Halacha Dalet. But Tzarech Lahaschel B'Gnus Osayim B'Shvach. So that's a principle in the Gemara, as we all know. You start with Gnus and you end with Shvach. You start with Bad, you end with Good. Ketzad. Matzchil u'mesaper shebetchiloi avasinu b'meiterchel fun of kofrim, that we all come from, now I'm from ancestors, that back in the time of Terach, they were kofrim, v'towin achar ahevel, and they were erring, again, following idols, which is baloney, hevel, v'rov t'v'nachar avodas alilim. So he changed, he puts his own words in there. Masayim b'dasa emes shekervonu hamakum lo. It's a very philosophical language, because the Haggadah we have is Kervonu Lavodoso. Achshav Kervonu Mas Lavodoso. But of course, the Rambam here is very Maimonidean. It just struck. I smiled when I saw this, because it's very much the Rambam in his core. What is the main thing that God brought us to? Liyichudo. To understanding the Yichud of God, which is very hard, according to the Rambam. Because anything you think of is a created idea, and therefore it can't be right. And everybody out there has a false idea of what God is, and so on and so forth. And the chief goal of the Jew, theologically speaking, is to master as much as humanly possible the concept of Yichud Hashem, which ain't easy, right? Echad v'en yochi ki yichudo, as we all know. And ain't a little bit, it's not like one like a number, not like one like a this, that, and the other. It's a unique. And even unique is not the right word. And so the way the Rambam sees it is the Jewish people evolved from Terach to Avram, from an idea that God has many parts to the idea God has, listen to what I'm saying. God has many parts, not that God has one part, right? But the God is unique. He has no parts. Okay, not that he has one part. He has no parts. You say, well, he's only one big part. He doesn't even have that. Yichud Hashem. It's very hard. And I imagine that at the Rambam Seder, and I mean this, the conversation, at least when he was speaking with people, intellectuals like himself, had to be, how did you see the Gilui HaYichud in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim? The story of Paro and the Jews and all that, yes, he knows that too. And the story of the Makas Bechoris and the Malchamavis and all that business, he knows that too. But what's the point of it? Right? What's the point? And it was to try to get the Jewish people to see a glimpse a little bit of what the ultimate realities of Hashem. How successful it was, I don't know. And it'd just be very interesting to see how the Rambam would touch all that up. Okay? Now, I'm not finished. V'chein maschil modia sh'avoni ma'ir l'far Mitzrayim v'chol rosh ha'gmalonu v'masayim b'nisin l'flo sh'nasol l'onu b'chirisenu. And then he starts and talks about the fact avoni ma'ir l'far Mitzrayim, and then v'chol harosh ha'gmalonu, and then you finish with the nisim l'flo sh'lav v'senu. So the Rambam knows full well that's not how the Haggadah goes, because in his Haggadah, two chapters later or wherever it is, he gives the Haggadah like you and I have. But you see, from his perspective, ideationally, it's kind of out of order. In other words, from a theological perspective, if you're trying to teach a class, it's kind of out of order. Now, because the document was an ancient document, because this is coming from, at least by the time of the Rambam, it was Sadi Gonim before that Amram Gon, so it's you know, blessed by the Gonim, so to speak. So he's a from Jew. So he's gonna follow the traditional Haggadah. But you see, in the Rambam's way of thinking, the philosophically proper way to present the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Pesach and all the rest of it goes in the way I just told you, which is very interesting. In other words, you start with the basics. And the basics is right? And then, so the first thing you started with is what you call universal general principles. That we Jewish people are here tonight because we were, even before Pesach, we were a people that evolved ourselves out of idolatry and the wrong notions of what God is. And we developed along the lines of a proper belief, right? As he says over here, you know, kervanu liyichudo. So that's this interesting expression. What do you mean kervanu liyichudo? Hashem helped Avram along. That's what that means. Right? As a matter of fact, the stories of the Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Nisim Niflos, Kervanu Liyichudo, they were all to help the Jews understand that they're dealing with something powerful. In other words, from the point of view of the slaves in Egypt, they didn't know what God is. They knew their ancestors had a God. Right? By the time you come to the slaves in Egypt, Mikotza Ruach Miaboda Kosha, as the Chazal say, they're already heavy in totes of Ruch HaVodah Kosh, including HaVodah Salila. So they knew there are a lot of gods out there, and they have a Jewish one. The Egyptians have an Egyptian one, the Greeks have a Greek one, the Polacks have a Polish one, this and the other, and the Jews have a Jewish one. The idea that all those gods don't exist, it's all one big, you know, misimpression, that was like, that's too heavy. And when you get the plagues, Dom Tzvardi and Kerem Arov, all you emerge out of that is, after the first plague, the Jews say like this, our God has power over the Nile River. That's pretty damn impressive. But they don't know they can do frogs. And they don't know you can do lice. And even when you do that, you don't know you can wreck the economy by bringing hailstorms and locusts and, you know what I mean, all that stuff. Each plague is another lesson in how extensive the power of God is, and therefore how nullified all the notions about confining the concept of God to, you know, a narrow specific phenomena is. Because all the words I just said are created by God. So Kirvana Labadosa, I'm sorry, Kirvana Yehuda. And the, you know, main thing is the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim, because if it's Ani V'lo Malach, Ani V'lo Saraf, I don't know how the Rambam understands that, because he doesn't have a Malach HaMabes flying with wings. And so it has to be that the nature of firstborns dropping dead all over Egypt instantly, without any sickness or anything like that, in all the places at the same moment, shows you something about Yichud Hashem. And I don't know if they chapta entirely and all the rest of that, but it, you know, shows you Yichud Hashem. And that's the way to understand from a philosophical perspective the Nakuda of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And that's what he said you should start with. Only after you master that do you get to the historical details about Avodah Yemeinu L'Farei Mitzrayim. And so he does have that because it's all in the Gemara. Rav says one thing and Shmuel says the other. So he has that. But he has it in his order. The chain maskel motia shavoni moyin l'par b'tzarim chol gro shigmulonu. And then after doing that, you go to what we would say would be arami ovid ovid, all the rest of it. You know, vayarei osod mitzvah vayanunu vayel avodah kasha vayitzak Hashem le'avaseinu, all that stuff. You know, lachaseinu zu adachak, you know, amaleinu zu abonim, and so on and so forth. So in other words, to the Rambam, not surprisingly, he's a philosopher. He's very different than me. I'm a historian. So to me, what speaks most, if you have a chronology sense in you, is the opposite. First about Talmud Abodim, you know, and all that sort of thing. And then, once you get the basic narrative in there, if you want to look for, you know, the antecedents of the narrative, you go to Mitchila of the Avodah Zarah B'Seinu. In other words, the Haggadah is written by a historian. It's not written by a philosopher. Isn't that cute? The philosopher would put it in a different way. First, we get the theology down. You understand? And we start with Terach and we work out how it worked out with Avram and where the story of the slavery in Egypt and the 10 plagues and the liberation of Egypt fit in philosophically into the story. That's what comes first. And that's the most important part. After that, you get into the historical details. Because, see, a philosopher is not interested in history, you know, unless it can be adduced to bring out philosophical proofs. I mean, that's what that is. You understand? So historians and philosophers work in opposite ways. The historian looks at what happened and then tries to deduce general principles, perhaps philosophical points, from the specific historical facts. Philosophers the other way around. Believe me, they don't care about the history. The Rambam didn't give a hoot about history unless it was an ancillary to getting across a correct theological or philosophical opinion. That's a different story. And to him, that's how the Torah reads. The Torah is a philosophy book. It has all these stories in there to buttress the philosophical points, right? And you see that in his presentation. And by the way, when do you have Avoni Mil Farm Bitzraim Machola Gemara Rosh Gemalano? In the Rambam's Haggadah, if he was writing it, which he doesn't, in other words, if he was writing it from scratch, in the beginning you'd have Mitzchila V'Rezara, and then Vachshon Kirvono Makom L'Avodoso, and how would it go? It would take you down to, I guess, you know, V'Hisha Amd or something like that, right? And then would come Avodim Ayinu, and you just have that paragraph. Avodim L'Farim Mitzrayim B'Yisrael Yoch Azog Zuna Tuya Ilo Otsa Kosh Baruch Hashemu Anu B'Neim Shumra B'Neim L'Farim Mitzrayim. And I think the part about Kulanu Chacham, that's like a later add-on. And then after you finish that short paragraph of Avodim Ayinu, tell you the basic facts, you go into more detail about those facts, and you say Arami Ovid Ovid, and Vayir Mitzrayim, and you know, Venice, and Vayarei Olono Amitzim Yanunu, and the Egyptians demonize us and all the rest of it. Because then those become the historical points that kind of bring into relief, you know, the philosophical truths, which are at the core of the Pesach experience. So is Pesach a historical holiday? Well, it certainly is. I'm saying, is that the nekud of it? Is Pesach a time we remember what happened long ago? Yeah, it has that aspect. No question about it. And you're grateful for God for liberating your ancestors. Or is Pesach more than that? Is Pesach an abject lesson demonstrating the Yichud Hashem? Right? In which case, you have to, you're not interested so much in the stories unless they touch upon the Yichud Hashem. So when Pharaoh's advisors say, Etz Belohimi, oh, and when you see Paro is going to give him, but God hardens his heart, takes away the Bechira, oh, these all have to do with Yichud Hashem, right? And how God, you know, is unique in this way, and that none of the Kochos in Egypt can do it. Because I'll tell you, this is my opinion. I'll tell you why I think the Rambam is thinking this way. If you read the story straight in the Chumash, you don't necessarily get Yichud Hashem. I know it sounds funny for me to say it, but listen to me. It could be, and there's no question in my mind that people long ago probably read it this way, some people. It was a battle of whose God is bigger. You had the Elohei Mitzrayim, and you had the Elohei Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. Okay, so you got a contest between this powerful force and that powerful force. Let's see who wins. I say my God is bigger than your God. You say your God is my father bigger than your father bigger. My father can knock your father out, and your father can knock my father out. What happens over the course of the 10 plagues? Oh, the God of the Hebrews busts the gods of Egypt. And by that, by the time it's over, you know, B'chol Elohei Mitzrayim Eseh Shvatim. God says, I will punish. In fact, it even sounds, the text of the Chumash sounds like, God says, I'm going to beat up Eseh Shvatim. I'm going to beat up the gods of Egypt. Right? So that by the time the Jewish people leave, the gods of Egypt are bloodied and battered, and we're walking out like kings. Because all the gods of Egypt took it on the chin from the God of the Hebrews, and the gods of Egypt were busted on that day, and so forth. And that's not right, right? What do I mean by that? There are no gods of Egypt. I mean, there are those deities the Egyptians believed in, but it's all figment of imagination. All the pyramids and all the great palaces and the Temple of Karnak and this and that and the other, the obelisks and so on and so forth, it's all baloney? Yes. That's not so easy for somebody growing up at that time to cop. It sounds more like our God is bigger than your God. And he sure proved it with the 10 plagues and all the rest of it. And after all, he said, I'm going to beat up the gods of Egypt. And he did. You see? So if you just do Avonim Meyino, Pirates Ryan, Vayotzin Hashem Misham, Vyachaz Roka, Serona Tuya, and then you talk about the raw that the Egyptians did to us, and eventually we cried out to Hashem, Vayar some Malenovis Lachatsenu and all the rest of it, but Yotzina Shambiel Chazagos Runatuya, it just sounds like our God invaded Egypt, smashed, beat up the gods of Egypt because he's stronger than them. And that's how we won. And that's not correct. That would not be showing you the Yichud Hashem, right? The Yichud Hashem is like this. The whole thing of Mitzrayim was one big sheker. It just didn't exist. They all believed in things, right? Achriya Hevel, Achriya Tov. What are you going to do? And that's not necessarily so easy to get across. Now, after thousands of years of brainwashing, we, you and I kind of take it for granted. I'm not sure how this was once upon a time. Anyway, now I'm sure, not exactly sure how the Rambam viewed people at the Siddurim he saw explaining it. I'll bet you 5-1 that probably he saw people saying it the first way. He didn't like that. And although he's an Orthodox Jew, so therefore he follows the regular classic Agada. But when he gives his opinion in chapter 7, he says it should be done in the way that emphasizes the Yichud Hashem. And then comes the story. Because once you understand there's only one God and nothing but, literally nothing but, literally not only no other gods, there is nothing else, then the Avodah Meyino fits into that pattern. So I just thought that that's very interesting insight into the way the Rambam who of course is Mr. Religious Philosopher, views how the Chazal, who to him are the greatest of philosophers, that's who the Chazal are to the Rambam, the greatest of philosophers, created this concept of the Haggadah Shel Pesach and the Sibri Tzitzis Mitzrayim Shel Pesach in order to get across the Yichud concept. Anyway, like I said before, I just wanted to share that and thank, as always, Mishpachas Stefanski for their support, and hope everybody have a Chag Kasher with Sameach.